From the Partnership for Public Service, you're listening to Transition Lab, a behind-the-scenes look at presidential transitions. I'm David Marchik. Today on Transition Lab, we have a fantastic guest, Stephanie Cutter. She's had a distinguished career, really working for the who's who in Democratic politics. She worked for Mario Cuomo, Ted Kennedy, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Michelle Obama. And for the work that we do at the partnership, her most important work was on the transition, the Obama-Biden transition, where she was the spokesperson for the transition team. So welcome to the podcast, Stephanie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with how you got involved with transition planning. When did you find out that you're going to be involved as the transition spokesman?
Well, for transition planning, the Saturday before the election, we all got an email from Pete Rouse saying, I want you to come to a meeting on Saturday so we can start thinking through the transition and what the schedule will look like for, at that time, Senator Obama, assuming he was going to win the presidency. And so I go to this meeting on the Saturday before the election, and my role was, you know, I was Michelle Obama's chief of staff, but then I was also a senior advisor to Senator Obama.
During the campaign.
During the campaign. You know, so it was a basically communications people, political people that came together for this meeting and scheduling people. And, you know, we talked through what the first couple of weeks could look like. We really didn't know what we were talking about, to be perfectly honest. You know, moving from campaign mode to governing role is a big shift.
And so what were the biggest challenges in that shift? I remember being an observer. I did the Clinton campaign, but being an observer every campaign, there's just a mind shift when someone goes from candidate to being president-elect, mm-hmm. where people say, wow, this person's actually going to be president. Mm-hmm. And part of the communications challenge is to condition the American public that this person's going to be president. So how do you do that? What were you thinking about from a communications perspective?
Well, you know, remember part of the threshold that we had to get over for Obama as a candidate was to show him as a president. Mm-hmm. You know, he was relatively unknown, a new senator. So we had been working on that for a long time. We were also in the middle of an economic crisis. Mm-hmm. And throughout that fall, there were lots of moments to show leadership and control over the situation to give people confidence. And we took full advantage of that for good reason. We needed to calm the markets down and calm the American people down that their government could protect them. But moving from a campaign into a transition mode, he was the president-elect. You know, you want to communicate that you're moving quickly to set up a government, confidently and competently. I look back at this time in sort of a blur because as soon as we won the election, the fire hose started because of the economic crisis. When are you going to announce your economic team? When are you going to put out your economic stimulus? When are you going to put out your financial stability plan day in and day out? And those things obviously take time. You want to move quickly, expeditiously, but carefully. That's what I remember from that time. The other thing, as a spokesperson, moving from a campaign to a transition, you know, you are the transition government of a sitting government. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, the Bush team couldn't have been more helpful, whether it was how we set up the communications office mm-hmm. to here's what we're going to say at the briefing today, to more in-depth meetings and at the Treasury talking about the specific bailouts that they were making after TARP was passed and the economy was about to fall off the hook. The automakers, some of the big banks were receiving bailouts as we were transitioning government.
Right.
We, you know, had to make a decision. We didn't want to own those decisions, but they couldn't be made without our input either.
Right.
One way or the other, we were going to be implementing them. So we had to be involved enough, and our economic advisors needed to be weighing in.
So one of the things we did was we looked back at the time between the election and the inauguration, 77 days, and looked at the press on every single day. What was incredible is that the first day, there was amazement and wonderment and excitement about Obama winning mm-hmm. and about the first African-American person being elected as mm-hmm. president of the United States, which was just an incredible day. The next day, the honeymoon was over. Mm-hmm. When are you going to appoint people? What are you going to do? What's next? Did you expect that, or did you expect a little longer honeymoon to actually enjoy the victory before you moved on to getting stuff done?
You know, David, we didn't know what to expect we had no expectations because it moved so fast. Mm-hmm. There was a team that had been planning the transition for months.
Led by Chris Liu, who's been on the podcast.
Sure. And so there were lists of people for specific positions. Vetting had already started. But in terms of the messaging and the calendar and the crisis planning and communications, you can't really plan for that, particularly at a moment like what we were in. I mean, the story was changing every single day on the economy. Congress was actively considering a stimulus. We had our own ideas on what should be in a stimulus. So we were passing legislation, staffing a government, trying to stem the tide of a financial disaster, you know, weighing in on financial bailouts, and still fighting two wars, both of which at that point were going pretty badly. So we were governing on day one, whether we liked it or not. So it was a challenge.
One of the things that Obama talked about was the expectations of everybody looking at him for leadership. Bush was highly unpopular. He was at the end of his term, and they were exhausted. So people are looking to Obama, but Obama said there's only one president.
Right.
So how did you balance the pressures and expectations for everybody looking to Obama for leadership with the fact that he wasn't president?
The challenge of expectations for President Obama is something that stayed with us for the entire first term. However, during the transition, we tried to do things like the second week, I think, we announced the president's Economic Recovery Advisory Board and pulled some of the best thinkers to the table to show that we were serious, substantive, and we were on it. And everybody from Volcker to sitting governors to past Treasury secretaries served on this board, some of which ended up in the cabinet. But to start thinking about the kinds of things that we need to do to get this economy back on track, that work started early. And, you know, gave people reassurances. There were lots of conversations with the Bush team. There were lots of conversations between President-elect Obama and President Bush to talk about the state of play. And then lots of conversations with the Hill, not just with President-elect, but with our entire team, at that point led by Phil Schillero, to make sure that a stimulus package was on track and framed and structured the way that would provide an ongoing stimulus.
How did you all handle the shift in the paradigm? We had Josh Bolton on the podcast, and he said it wasn't just Obama running against Bush. It was Obama and McCain running against Bush because Bush was so unpopular. So the day after the election, Bush is incredibly gracious to Obama, rolls out the red carpet, and basically there's cooperation and collaboration between the two. This is after a year and a half of basically running against Bush. So how did the campaign team shift that paradigm, and was that a big adjustment?
It was a huge adjustment. We had to be very careful with our comments and what we were putting out there because we were working so closely in cooperation with them, and they were being extraordinarily helpful to us because of the economic crisis that we were in. As soon as you move from a campaign to a transition, out goes the campaign rhetoric. It's not Bush's economy this and failure that. It's what are we going to do?
Right.
It's looking to the future. It's putting real plans in place. It's putting the people that are going to be shepherding those plans in place. And frankly, we had enough to deal with on our own. There was no time to think about, oh, well, remember this positioning on the campaign of Obama versus Bush. We had much bigger things to think about.
So let's talk about the president's schedule. So there was a team in place before the election led by Chris Liu, and there was a really talented group of people working on that. And then you and others are brought in the Saturday before the election. Was the president-elect's schedule decided for the first, second, and third week before the election?
No.
Or did you kind of readjust post-election?
Yeah. We readjusted. It was good to have a framework. You know, we knew the day after the election, the president-elect was going to take his kids to school. He hadn't done that throughout the campaign. We knew that one of the priorities is to get the kids situated in a new school in Washington. And as Michelle's chief of staff, that was one thing that I had been working on up to the election. But after the election, you know, they needed to go see those schools. That was something that we needed to organize. But we also needed to figure out the sequence in which we wanted to roll out cabinet. And the president-elect at that point had general ideas, but not specific ideas. And that work started in interest. Unlike a campaign where you can throw up a press conference or do an event or make a statement, We are now the transitioning government. So you had to be very careful about where the president was showing up. There is only one president at a time. He's no longer a candidate. So what is his role? His role is to put together his government. Mm-hmm. So we needed to show him hard at work. For the most part, in the 2 months before the inaugural, the few moments that he was seen in public, it was chairing the president's Economic Recovery Advisory Board, standing with his national security team, holding a meeting, doing a service event, being with his family. It was not a daily occurrence, which meant that the communications team had to be putting out information on a regular basis. Fortunately or unfortunately, because transitions are a little unwieldy, information was leaking out all right. the time. Because if somebody is interviewing for a cabinet post, they're going to tell somebody, somebody's going to tell somebody else, and before you know it, it's in the Washington Post. And there was very little that we could comment on or confirm until something was set in stone. We had a few instances where things leaked out, and then people didn't pass vet. And a few people that got announced that ultimately didn't pass vet and pulled out. We could plan these big moments for the president, whether it's a press conference or a meeting with his economic team. But in terms of the day-to-day, it was largely unplanned.
And how did you decide what the president-elect would talk about, what you would talk about, what Dan Pfeiffer would talk about, what Rahm Emanuel, who is the chief of staff's designate, would talk mm-hmm. about? How did you prioritize who would say what?
Well, if you notice, you've read all the clips, there's not that much talking. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's something that needs to be said about the overall transition of what or what the first 100 days are going to look like, you know, that's probably Rahm Emanuel. If there's a statement about when is he going to announce his national security team or his economic team or how are you going to deal with the particular bailout, that was probably me. Mm-hmm. And you know, you probably notice in those statements, I'm not really saying anything.
Right.
Because there's so little that we could weigh in on at right. that point. We couldn't talk publicly about the stimulus. We couldn't talk publicly about those bailouts. And it was really just a process story that we were driving.
The first thing that the transition team announced was Rahm Emanuel to be chief of staff. Mm-hmm. And that was widely seen as a positive appointment. It was decisive. Rahm was a well-known person and a strong leader. So how did you deal with leaks? We looked back at the clips and there were all these people rumored to take these positions. So mm-hmm. John Kerry was going to be Secretary of State. Tony Lake was going to mm-hmm. be the head of the CIA. Jim Steinberg, National Security Advisor. Mm-hmm. And the press talked about those appointments with certainty.
Sure.
And none of them happened.
Right.
So did you tamp them down? Did you not comment? What was your approach dealing with the press?
You know, it was probably a little different with each one, but there was very little we could confirm or not confirm. But if we knew somebody, you know, you get yourself in a little bit of a situation. If you say, no, it's not going to be that person, then do you know who it is? And we could never comment on something like that. I mean, the Hillary Clinton scenario was a secret. For
right.
a very long time, and a long time on the transition. We're talking days.
Right.
But, you know, those aren't things that we could comment on. We certainly didn't want to scoop the president-elect, but what if we confirmed something and then it didn't pan out?
Right. So a press reporter would call you and say, I heard that John Kerry is going to be Secretary of State, and you would say, no comment?
No comment.
And they would say, come on, just give us a little hint, and mm-hmm. you would say,
I can't comment on it. Until something was done, announced, and a plan to announce it, then there was nothing to comment on because everything was so fluid and moving so fast, it was very difficult to get ahead of anything.
And you would never even say, I wouldn't run that story. If you do, you're going to be wrong. You just would.
I may have on certain stories, definitely not on the national security team because right. then they would be on the hunt. Or who it was, and I certainly wouldn't want to leave a trail back to Secretary Clinton.
One of the challenges that we saw during the transition was kind of tension between, I would say, progressives mm-hmm. and moderates.
Mm-hmm.
There's tension still that exists in the party.
Sure.
Obama ran as a progressive, mm-hmm. but then many of his appointments were moderates. He mm-hmm. kept Secretary Gates, he appointed Larry Summers, he appointed Tim Geithner,
mm-hmm.
and the left was highly critical. How did you deal with that politically? You just energized the left on the campaign, mm-hmm. and they maybe were disappointed with some of the appointments. How did you react to that as the spokesperson?
You know, it's interesting that President-elect Obama won by not being a progressive mm-hmm. or a moderate, but being Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And there were raised expectations on all sides about what he would do. I think that the difference between campaigning and governing in the middle of an economic crisis is pretty stark. And some of those decisions were, who doesn't need on-the-job training? Who's been through a bailout before? Who knows how to implement a large stimulus package? Who knows how government works? Those types of decisions. And I think President Obama felt that Larry Summers and Tim Geithner and Kristi Roemer were the most qualified to do that. Geithner had been through bailouts.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the middle as the president of the New York Fed, and a number of the...
He worked with Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke.
But he had also been at Treasury during some of the Japanese bailouts and knew the problems of zombie banks and
right.
a prolonged recession. And it's ultimately, the economic team met every single day for multiple hours, which took up most of my time.
So you sat with the economic team participating in those meetings.
Yes, and developing policy, developing plans, you know, the developing the stimulus plan, and not to say that I had a hand in writing the stimulus plan, but the topic of the economy overtook everything. And the economic team basically started working together on day one. They knew that they were the economic team. They didn't know Tim Geithner was going to be Treasury Secretary, Larry was going to be the head of the NEC, et cetera, et cetera. But that's what President Obama ultimately made the decision on and was most comfortable on.
So there were a few big scheduling decisions related to Obama's schedule during the transition. First is when he met with President Bush, was a couple days after the election.
Mm-hmm. Earlier than ever before.
There was an economic summit that mm-hmm. President Bush was hosting with a bunch of leaders from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
He declined to go to that. How did you all decide his schedule, and what messages did you want to send with that?
Well, we really felt strongly that there was only one president at a time, and George Bush was the president, and we did everything we could to support that.
Right.
So sending a president-elect to a meeting of world leaders who are convening in the middle of the economic crisis would be a bit of a problem.
And did the Bush team want Obama to go, or they...
You know, I know he was invited,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think there was a lot of pressure for him to go.
As we approach the inauguration, he became much more active as a spokesperson. He did Saturday radio addresses.
Mm-hmm.
There was an Adam Nagorny piece that talked about how he looked at the way that Roosevelt mm-hmm. communicated with the American public during the Great Depression. What was your strategy for increasing his intensity of his communications as you approached the inauguration and the cadence of how much he commented?
Once we became more comfortable in that transition role, you know, it was very difficult to go dark, particularly because, again, in an economic crisis where consumer confidence was plummeting in November, I think something like 500 plus thousand jobs
were
lost.
Two days after the election, the Dow dropped 500
right.
points.
So somebody needed to communicate confidence. Somebody needed to reassure people that we collectively, the Bush White House, the Bush administration, the transition team, president-elect, had this under control. So we started to do those radio addresses. You know, he went from commuting every day to the American people on the campaign trail to basically going dark. And we needed to get him back out there in a controlled way.
And did the same reporters that covered the campaign cover the transition, or was it a new batch of reporters?
It was a mix. You know, there were reporters that were specifically designated to cover the transition. There were reporters that were designated to cover specific parts of the transition, like the State Department team, the economic team, transportation, housing. You know, it was across the board.
So his main focus was on the economic crisis, but he also did some symbolic moves. For example, one of the things he did right before inauguration was he met with John McCain,
mm-hmm.
his challenger.
Sure.
He went to Walter Reed. What were those meetings and those events designed to symbolize? What message were you trying to project?
Well, in meeting with John McCain, you know, part of, you know, look at how he put his cabinet together.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mix of Democrats and Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
A mix of his old adversaries, mm-hmm. opponents, and supporters. And he wanted strong people, strong opinions, and a team of rivals is how we thought about it.
Right.
And meeting with John McCain, you know, those two had a lot of respect for each other. And he knew that in governing, he would need John McCain's help. And John McCain was perfectly willing. And he campaigned in the interest of bipartisanship. When he was in the Senate, he worked in bipartisanship.
Mm-hmm.
he certainly foresaw his presidency as one based in bipartisanship, particularly in the middle of economic crisis and two ongoing wars. You know, and it didn't prove to be that way for a lot of different reasons. There wasn't many willing people on the other side of the aisle who wanted to do that with him.
Transitions are one of the hardest times for folks that have worked on the campaign. There's just huge amounts of uncertainty. You all go from collaborating on a mission to elect a president, then you win, and then people are not only working on the transition, but they're worried about their own jobs. What do you remember from that time and the personal uncertainty and the personal difficulty that you experienced?
I remember just not having time to think about it.
Right. You were just head down.
Head down, drinking out of a fire hose, dealing with the economic stuff, and dealing with the flow of questions that came in, both in terms of who we were rolling out as part of the cabinet, you know, who wasn't making it, but then substantively, when are you going to put out your stimulus plan? You know, when are you going to put out your financial stability plan? All of those things were a lot to deal with at that point. I wasn't thinking about what job I was going to get. I ultimately, because I spent so much time with the economic team, I ended up going and helping manage Geithner's confirmation, which, if you remember, wasn't...
Some challenges, right?
Had some challenges. And so I ended up with the economic team going to Treasury. In terms of other jockeying for particular jobs, you know, it was obvious, you know, that Robert Gibbs was going to be the press secretary. David Axelrod was going to be the senior advisor. Dan Pfeiffer would have a communications role. Valerie Jarrett would be a senior advisor. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, we all kind of knew, you know, how it was going to fall out. So there really wasn't jockeying.
Right. What do you know now that you wish you knew when you were taking on the role as transition spokesperson and helping to manage the transition?
Don't take it. No, just kidding. Not really, but sort of. You know that, I guess, how different. You know, I had been in government before. Mm-hmm. I was in President Clinton's White House mm-hmm. for years, and I knew what it was to govern. But I had just come off a campaign, and the transition between campaigning and going into a transition is stark. You're basically a shadow government. Mm-hmm. And as a shadow government, you have to worry about what you say mm-hmm. in terms of moving the markets, which were incredibly fragile at mm-hmm. that moment, and not inflaming something that would harm the ability for a new White House to govern.
Right.
You know, if I understood that better going through it, I think my mindset would have been different.
Here's my final question. What advice would you give to whomever the next spokesperson is for a transition? What are the most important things that person should think about before he or she takes that role?
Well, the biggest is that you are no longer on the campaign. You are a government. And I know that the Trump White House operates differently than the Obama White House. But when we were in the White House, there were certain norms of what you could do say as the president or even the president-elect. It is the highest office in the land. It is an office that people revere across the world. And you need to show it some respect. So take off your campaign hat and put on your governing hat and think about the long term, not the short term.
Well, Stephanie Cutter, thank you for being with us. And more importantly, thank you for the service to our country.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Just a reminder that we invite guests with many different political views on Transition Lab. The views they express are theirs and not the partnership's. If you like Transition Lab, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.